Taking a look inside the lives and minds of some of the world's most inspiring thought leaders.
I started to see, hey, your career doesn't have to be so linear. You don't have to jump from job to job to make the living or have the lifestyle that you want. What if I can create something of value to others that could bring value to me?
People living inspiring lives and motivating others.
I feel like everything always happens for a reason, and if you fail, there's a learning, and that learning is invaluable.
Brought to you by Athletic Greens. This is the Inspiring Lives Podcast with Gary Birtwistle.
I'm Gary Birtwistle, and welcome to the Inspiring Lives Podcast, the show that looks inside the minds of some of the world's foremost thought leaders to discover their recipe for success. If you're new to the show, welcome. We appreciate you joining us today on Inspiring Lives. Wherever you are, thanks for hitting the download button, and welcome to the Inspiring Lives Podcast, brought to you by the most complete supplement for a better you, Athletic Greens. Inspired to make her own clean granola, little did Erica Lou Williams know it could turn into a thriving brand served in the kitchen of some of the highest profile brands in the world. Little brands like Facebook, Twitter, Uber, Square, Dropbox, Google. Instead of using GMO vegetable oils and adding brown or refined sugar, Erica used healthier ingredients like organic coconut oil and other nutrient-dense superfoods to create a cleanse-friendly granola that not only tasted great, but was actually really good for you. That was the journey for Erica and her company, Great Nola. And Erica joins us on the show today. Erica, welcome to the Inspiring Lives Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's always interesting when you speak to somebody who starts at the grassroots, and your brand actually started at farmers markets. And I'm just interested to know, across the table when you're face-to-face with your potential customer, you get to learn a lot. What did you learn during that process of starting at the farmers markets?
So my first market, I think, really solidified the fact that my granola was, in fact, really, really good. And I could get more customers than just my husband, my friends, and my family. And when I sought out to launch my business, I purposely picked the farmer's market because I felt it was going to be the best way to get instant feedback without having to plan and prep too much as far as launching a business goes. I felt you get to have face-to-face interaction. You get to see people taste it right then and there. And really, like, from that first bite, from the first customers, I was able to kind of tell that people felt like it was the best granola they've ever had. And then the next week, I already had repeat customers. So that was really exciting, especially when I was just a brand new side hustling entrepreneur with no plan or intention of ever going full time on making granola as my career and aspiration. But I got to learn a lot of other things, like, you know, what flavors were the best, or, you know, I had my first flavor that I called coconut almond, and then I renamed it to the original because I realized coconut tends to be a very polarizing ingredient. So you get to get rapid feedback that you get to iterate on very quickly, so long that you're not investing too much on, you know, your product or your packaging.
Did you have to put your ego aside? Because it is, when you've got a brand new product that you're in love with and your friends have said good things about, that can tend to build up one's ego. And then you get face-to-face with the real consumer who's not only voting with their palate, but also voting with their wallet. Where did ego fit for you in all that?
Being really honest, I don't get too much negative feedback. Like, I get occasionally the buyer who, you know, back in the day, my first formula, I used stevia. And I, you know, those were things where some buyers might read it and they might see an ingredient and they might say, oh, I think it's going to taste bitter because it has stevia. But then the thing is, when you have this interaction with the buyer, you can still have a conversation with them that, if you're just on a shelf as a product, you never get that interaction with the customer. So I think fortunately, most buyers, especially at where I live and you're in the community of a farmer's market, people are always receptive to having a conversation. So I think the first hard part was maybe running into people who just didn't want to have a sample. And I think if no one wanted to taste, you can't really convince them otherwise. But once you kind of have a dialogue and you get feedback, you have a conversation, as long as you have the right EQ and, you know, personability, you can just have some banter and have a discussion. But I really don't get too much negative feedback, and my product typically has won on its taste. And by winning, I actually mean like I've actually gotten voted into these big office pantries of Google, Twitter, and Uber. So employees literally came out and they sampled a bunch of products and they voted for my granola over others. So in some ways, like the business has made me build my ego about my product, but I went in with zero ego. And I do know that I always have to listen to my customers. And if they do get any feed, if I do get any feedback, that might be a theme. I might need to pivot and think about it and not, you know, not get too stuck in my ways, because at the end of the day, it's all about my customer and not me.
And it started as a side hustle for you. You had a full-time job and this started in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
What was the turning point or the event or the moment where you decided that you were going to go chips in, that you were going to go full time? What was the turning point that gave you the confidence to do that?
Yeah, sure. And I'll frame with some high level timelines. So I was working my full time in tech. So I live near San Francisco, California. So it's the heart of the Silicon Valley startup scene. And I was about 4.5 to 5 years into my tech career, working 9 to 5, doing a 3-hour commute on the train, you know, round trip every day. And I started to get the itch and I decided to launch my farmer's market business, selling my granola in mid-2013. So mid-2013 was my official, hey, I'm in business. I sold my first bag at the farmer's market. I did not go full-time until almost the beginning of 2018. So we're talking about 4.5 years of side hustling. And all of that journey was about confidence building for me. So I mentioned that I did get my product voted into a lot of these tech offices like Google. So Google was actually one of my very first customers that I secured 1/2 year into my business. So I launched as a selling out of my kitchen to the farmer's market. And in 6 months, I get this huge order, and it's recurring, by the way, of granola for Google, 1,500 pounds a month. Like, I had to outsource my manufacturing immediately. But it was actually really scary. It felt like, you know, I had this huge giant customer who, if they decided at any time to pull out, suddenly I have no business. I have no sales to support, you know, this outsourced manufacturing I have, or just the business in general. And it took me years, like at least 2 years, to build enough velocity getting more customers. As I mentioned, I'm in Twitter, I'm in Uber, I'm in Dropbox in these offices. Those wins didn't come until about 2 to 3 years down the road. And I would say that once I started to see those second, third, fourth, fifth wins, and I realized that, you know, there were certain activities I can control at the top, whether that be getting introductions to companies, sending out samples, following up via email, or building up my social media, making relationships and sending product to social media influencers on Instagram. Once I was able to see what things I could control, what activities I could do that could have impact to the bottom line, whether that's sales online or getting more corporate customers. And I felt that I was constrained on time that I had to dedicate to the business because I had a full-time job. That's when I started to think about going full-time. So slowly I got to the point where physically I'm showing up to this job or to work 40 plus hours a week, commuting almost 3 hours every day to do something that, you know, I didn't necessarily want to do, because I felt like that was all opportunity loss for building this business that suddenly I feel like I actually know what the inputs are to drive certain goals for the business.
You just said you were doing a 3-hour commute, and you've said just then you were sitting on the train. Can you remember staring out the window of the train, eventually starting to dream of an alternative to your 5 years in tech? What could you see? There must have been a turning point where you started to dream about doing something else, and then you started to put together what you could do. Was there ever a time where you sat down and actually had a dream in mind, or you could clearly see what you wanted to do that helped you go chips in?
I would say that I am one of those, I start very small, and I wouldn't say that I'm like this huge visionary dreamer. For me, it started with an itch. I started to see others around me and, you know, working within tech startups. And I started to see, hey, your career doesn't have to be so linear. You don't have to jump from job to job to make the living or have the lifestyle that you want. And what if I can create something of value to others that could bring value to me? Maybe I can achieve a certain lifestyle that I want, especially as a woman who wants to raise a family at some point. And, you know, you always consider how is that going to impact your career? I want to have the flexibility ultimately to, you know, kind of run my own show and also have balance in my personal and family life. That's kind of the lifestyle that motivates me. And so from that, I started to get this itch. Now the itch was just, okay, well, what's going to be my business idea? And having worked in the tech industry my entire life, I probably sat with, you know, a list of ongoing ideas of what kind of tech product or software tool maybe I could invent or build. And I just was never inspired by any of those ideas or problems. I'm just not that passionate about the tech industry. On the other side, I'm super passionate about health, wellness, and food and where they all intersect. And there's just, you know, unfortunately, a lot of junk in the market and not a lot of healthy yet tasty snacks and granolas. So the granola itself was not meant to be the business. It was just something I was already making for myself and my husband when we were craving something sweet and crunchy, but has to fit a certain dietary lifestyle. And I just remember having some white space from work. I wasn't, it was during the holiday lull. There wasn't a lot of stuff going on. And in my boredom, that's when I decided to kind of think about launching my granola as my business idea versus some tech idea. So it started as a very small idea and a small notion. I think even selling granola, the idea of selling granola, it's a very specific category. It's actually not a really huge category in the US, surprisingly, compared to say like the bars market. That's actually not a huge vision, right? But it was just this sense of wonder and curiosity that I had about myself and about this product I was making for me and my family and my husband that inspired me to just take that next step. And for me, it comes from taking that next step. It was never about laying out this grandiose 10-year plan and like working backwards from it. It was literally deciding, well, what will it take to just sell it and prove that it's good? What can I do in 3 months? Let's just launch it at a farmer's market. And then from there, I've built momentum. And then slowly I started to build the confidence and realization that maybe this could be a full-time thing. It could be something bigger.
So with that next step idea in mind, if you could go back a number of years to 2014 before you got the big gig with Google and you were starting out, because there's a lot of people listening to this who have an idea in mind or they'd like to have the idea, but they are in a business that they don't love, but they aspire to be part of this movement where you have more control. And to your point, you can focus on the things that matter. When you think about the steps you went through, if I could take you back to that time and you could take a different step, what would you do differently? What change would you make?
I'm one of those people that never likes to live in regret. I feel like everything always happens for a reason. And if you fail, there's a learning, and that learning is invaluable. And maybe it could be a weakness of mine too, but God, it's hard. You know, I took 4.5 years to take the leap, and I sit here now and I still will say I don't regret taking, you know, going, I don't regret going, not going faster. So many things changed from when I launched the business in 2013 to when I went full time in 2018 that I couldn't have built the business that I built now. For example, selling online wasn't as viable in 2013 and 2014 when I launched. So I feel like I would have had a completely different strategy if I would have left the business earlier. It's really hard. Honestly, I have to say that me hanging on to my job, building the network that I built from my tech career, learning the skills that I learned from my existing career, that was more to me than just giving me security and stability with a salary. So much of that enabled me to be the entrepreneur that I am today because of what I learned kind of out in the field and almost like on someone else's dime. But if I have to, you know, look back at what I could have done differently, I mean, I would say that I've never been the type that has done a lot of like long-term strategic planning. And I tend to make some small things very big in my mind. So if I'm not sure where to start, or if I'm asked a question that I'm completely unfamiliar with, I might procrastinate and wait 2 months. When I do it, I realize it could have been done in a week. Like, I think my biggest thing is just telling myself, look, everything is going to be unknown. You don't know the size of the problem until you dig into it. So don't waste any time and figure that stuff out, because otherwise you might find yourself 3 months down the road and you're like, oh my God, this was such an easy problem. All I had to do was ask this person or whatnot. And you might've wasted some time. So I do think there are certain things that I could have acted on faster if I would have approached it in a way that was just where I felt less intimidated by the fact that things were unknown.
With just on the brand you've created, or sorry, you're creating and have created, mm-hmm. who is the person that you want to become?
That's a great question. So I do think that my brand embodies a lot of my core values. And I think one of them is this aspiration to achieve greatness. And greatness can be defined by every single person differently. But for me, my mantra is that you should never just settle, whether that's your career, whether that's what you eat, how things taste, the ingredients of foods that you put in your body, whether it comes down to, you know, the way you interact with your friends and family and your relationships. I feel like there's no point in just kind of coasting and cruising, and you should be aspiring and achieving the lifestyle that ultimately will fulfill your passion and make sure that you're living by your values every single day. So, one of the things that I've learned, both from my athletic career as a swimmer, I swam at Stanford, and I competed at 2 Olympic trials. And I would say towards the end of my tech career, is that these are both careers in some way that on paper are really glittery and glamorous, or they check all the boxes. But at some point in both careers, I found myself unfulfilled. And even though it looked good on paper, even though maybe you're chasing this title and you have this great pedigree, it didn't make me happy, you know? So the business, super small, really random, it's granola. It's so, like, you know, my parents and my grandma were like, what? You're going to like leave your tech career to, went to Stanford to like do granola? That doesn't matter. You know, I think at the end of the day, you have to kind of listen to like what's important to you. Like, what do you care about? What's the lifestyle that you want? How do you want to fill your day? What makes you happy? And so long that that fits in the overall pillars of you're being a good person, you're being a good citizen, you're being good to the environment, and you're helping others, go for it. And I think just going through this journey, it's ongoing, right? Where I feel like I do have to stay grounded in the fact that, of course, I'm motivated by building something hopefully much bigger than what it is today. And hopefully there might be a financial, outcome from that. But at the end of the day, if it all fails, I'm not going to die feeling like I wasted my time being a zombie. This is stuff that I love, and I feel fulfilled every day by doing it. And I don't feel like I'm settling for anything or just settling for, you know, a salary, because it's what you should be doing when this is what I ultimately want to do. And I think that's the message that I hope others can resonate with, and hopefully get them to do stuff that will just make them feel more fulfilled every day and passionate about what they're doing.
See, that's really interesting for me, Eric, because on the About Us page, on your business page, there is a line that says, always strive for greatness. And of course, it's part of the logo, it's part of the product. And then I hear you talk about your swimming career, which I'll get to in a second, and being in tech. So with what you just said and that line on your website, it occurs to me that perhaps back then, back in the day, you weren't always striving for greatness, that you were a successful swimmer. But my question is, when you're on the blocks, were you actually striving for greatness? When you're in tech, were you doing work, but you weren't striving for greatness? But now you've actually found something which lights you up. Now you feel as though you can strive for greatness. Is there a connect or a disconnect between all those things?
No, I think that everything has its life cycle, right? So when I was swimming, and let's just call my swimming career a little over 10 years, There were peaks and there were valleys. And I think when you can't emerge from your valleys and you feel like that fire and that innate desire to just want to show up for good and for bad is gone, then you're settling, right? It doesn't matter if you are on a certain level. If this fundamentally is something that within your life and within your core values does not make you happy, it's not going to get you to an endpoint that you care about, then it's time to hang up the towel. And it's okay to say no. And even without a plan B or a plan C, it's okay to end something with the hopes that something may emerge that's new. And ironically, I would say that when I decided to retire from my swimming career, which I did retire from a shoulder injury, and ultimately I fell out of love with the sport, I did not have any plans as far as what I was going to do next. So I stopped after my second year in college with two more years to go. And I will say that looking back, had I not closed the door on swimming, did I not throw in the towel and say, look, I don't want to do this anymore? And sure, on some end, some might feel like, okay, you're not striving for greatness. But in my end, it's like, I'm not settling. Like, that's, to me, I'm not settling for doing something that fills up so much of my time that ultimately doesn't make me happy and isn't going to get me to where I want to be long term. Once I shut that door, I actually got my foot in the door in the tech industry. So basically, I had more free time. I was able to work for a tech company and had my first working experience in the middle of college. And I would say that if I would have continued my swimming career and did my full 4 years, who knows? 2 years later, I could have landed in a completely different industry, right? Like, you just, everything has its own butterfly effect. And so I started my tech career, and similar thing, you know, it had its life cycle. Really excited about learning, loved all the companies that I worked for. But after 4 or 5 years, I just started to get this itch to do something else. Whether you quantify it as a bigger thing or not, it was just something bigger to me because it felt more personal. It was a more personal drive. And that's when I started to do Great NOLA. And if you think about connecting the dots, if I didn't quit swimming, I may not have launched my career in tech. If I didn't launch my career in tech, there's no way I would have been able to build the company that I've built, because so much of my sales and so much of my volume went into those very tech companies that I had a network in. So I do feel like they're all connected. And with Great NOLA, I mean, this journey has been 6 years plus, and who knows how long it'll go. And there might be a life cycle too. Who knows? Maybe 10 years from now, I'm over it. Or maybe 10 years, I get to the point where I want to be. But all that matters is that when I'm measuring myself on a daily, monthly, annual basis, if I feel happy with what I'm doing and I'm filling my time with the things that make me feel fulfilled, then I feel like I'm striving for greatness. The moment you feel like, you know, you're filling your time with stuff that you're just like, why am I doing this? This doesn't make me happy. Or I'm just like not passionate about this. That's when I feel like you're settling. So it doesn't really matter like what it is necessarily. I think it's about how it aligns with, you know, what makes you feel satisfied and fulfilled.
With the scholarship you had at Stanford University and then competing at the Olympic trials twice, so it's a very successful career you had in swimming. If you could go back to that time with what you have experienced through the business world now, with the success you've seen with your brand, if you could go back to Stanford and put your arm around that young girl who's about to go through this journey, would you suggest any tips? Would you suggest any ways of approaching it? Would you give any advice? What would you say to that young girl?
Oh my God, swimming is brutal.
just so you know, swimming is brutal.
Swimming is brutal. I think the training has changed since I swam. I don't think you're doing this insane amount of yardage every single day. But no, I mean, I think that the journey that I went through and how hard I felt like it was, as far as just the rigor in the training and the hours and the early mornings, all that has made life so much easier. I don't have kids yet. I'm sure having kids that's going to be the next step. But having gone through swimming, now I can say, wow, my high school schedule is so rigorous. Like, it trumps the business by far. And I work hard it might be that I love doing everything about my business, even the hard work. Whereas when I swam, I didn't enjoy the hard work. I didn't enjoy practice. It sucked. I only like the 5% of the time that you're competing. So that's what the big challenge was. But if I were to look back and, you know, talk to my old self, I would try to instill the wisdom that, hey, Erica, what you're doing now is going to build the resilience that you're going to need for when you're kind of doing your next course of stuff that you love to do, but you're going to know how to outwork every single other person. But I think that with swimming, I worked so hard, never got to sleep in for like 10 years of my life. I accumulated a lot of sleep debt, which I definitely took advantage of after I retired. But it's prepared me. It's prepared me for, you know, the hard times in my career. It's prepared me for the early mornings and the hard times and the overtime for the business. And I think that all of that has kind of just built the foundation for me to hopefully be successful in the business, or me as a future parent, or me in whatever future career I may have if Great Nola is not the forever road.
That's a great answer. And I think there's a great answer, not only for the person doing it, but also for the parents or the support team around. And I guess if I take that off ramp just for a second, a lot of successful people like yourself will talk about their council, the people around them, their team around them. And quite often when you're talking about the business, you will talk about your husband, Tank, who by all accounts of the visuals I've seen is a tank.
Yeah.
What's the most important thing that your husband, Tank, has done to support you?
I think that the biggest thing is the fact that he always is my number one fan. So I think the first couple years in the business, I didn't really know what I was doing. I was not very confident in the business. You know, again, I had one customer. It was Google, besides just the handful of consumers that I had at the farmer's market. And I think deep down, he's always had this quiet confidence in me, so that anytime, you know, maybe I'm hitting a wall, he'd always be the one there saying, you know your product's really good, right? You know you have something with Great Nola. And I think it always comes at the right time to kind of prop me back up in those times where I feel like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. Also, I have to say that he's my first quality assurance engineer. So taste testing, giving feedback, all that stuff. I mean, he was my first customer. So he will hopefully reap the benefits, and he gets them ongoing because there's infinite granola in the house at all times.
It's funny, isn't it? When you dig behind a brand, people would look at you guys, healthy, good-looking couple, great brand, and you drop Google, Facebook, Twitter, Uber, Slack, Dropbox. I mean, you've got the creme de la creme of today's modern-day successful brands that are your customers, yet you just said in that conversation that there were questions and kind of an imposter syndrome that goes through our minds, even though we have all those reasons to believe that we're going well. Was there ever really a moment, Erica, where you just went, this is just all too hard. Why am I doing this?
So I would say that those moments were when I was still in the side hustle phase. And the side hustle phase, as I mentioned, was 4.5 years. I don't think I ever really saw the light and the prospect of Great Nola becoming a full-time thing until about 2.5 or 3 years in. So I would say that ever since I started to see the light of, hey, this could be something that maybe if I went full-time and I dedicated all my mind share and my time to this business, I can turn it into something a lot bigger than I thought it could be. Ever since then, I've been really trying, you know, momentum is really huge in a business. So once you kind of know what are the key activities you need to do, whether that's prospecting, introductions, dropping off samples, networking, all that stuff. Once you kind of know what direction you need to march in and what you have to do to kind of drive the ball forward a little bit, momentum is really, really key. And I feel like as long as, you know, in some ways, metaphorically, you got to just always have darts that are shooting in the air. Many of them are going to drop, but as long as you have some in the air, you can still keep going. So far, like ever since I quit and I went full time about 2 years ago, I've been moving forward. Not to say that I haven't had lulls, but I think a big help was the fact that I gave myself a lot of time with no timeline in the beginning to figure out if I ever was going to get enough courage to do this full time. And there was never no pressure. And honestly, in that first 2-3 years when I was side hustling, there was definitely a year plus in there that I just wasn't even doing anything for the business. I was just kind of organically letting it run, but it wasn't like I was on this mission to go full time and grow it. And then slowly, slowly, I started to get some other wins. And then I started to kind of have a bigger view on where this could move. So that's why I do think that it is okay to be patient. It is okay to not have things figured out and have your side job in the meantime, or your full-time job and this be your side job. You have to find the right timing. There's no right or wrong way to leap. And I would say, like, being in Silicon Valley, being around a lot of entrepreneurs, I would say most people's mindset around entrepreneurship is, you know, fail fast, like, you know, be super bullish and just go full time and just figure it out really quickly. I'm more of the slow burn philosophy, and it really served me well because I just needed my time to figure things out.
And you do take time to figure things out, because I think you wrote a blog about 2017, and there was a photo of you and Tank. I think you were lying in hay, and
funny engagement photo. Yeah, it was our offsite.
Yeah. It was. And you said, this is a photo of the first Williams team offsite.
Uh-huh.
And you said in that post that one of the questions that you and Tank ask yourselves is, how do I want to change? In brackets, how will you be different when you go through this exercise again in 12 months? And my question is, in 2020, 2021, based on where you are and where you want to go, how will you have changed?
Well, if you like to think of all your learnings and failures and learnings from those failures as marbles, I hope to have, you know, a full jar of marbles. And one of the things that I try to do when I run the business is I try to document things. As I get really busy, it gets hard, but I use Trello as my tool, which is almost like a virtual sticky note bulletin board. And as I have wins, as I have learnings, as I have, you know, big milestones or events, small things, very tactical things, I try to keep record of all of this stuff as I go, not necessarily on a daily basis, but definitely by month. I try to take a couple minutes and like reflect back and think about learnings, failures, and wins, because, you know, you go through this, time flies. Right. And as you get older, it goes even faster. And it's really easy to forget what were the key moments that helped you grow. So for me, I'm always trying to constantly learn. I love that feeling of constant self-development, but you have to kind of solidify it a little bit by writing it down or taking a pause to think about it and reflect on it, and then make sure that you are pivoting or changing in the right direction that you want to go. So I do think that, you know, in life, you kind of are who you are. But I do want to make sure that, you know, as the next 12 months come, I can look back and reflect on, wow, look at all these things that I accomplished, or look at all these things that I like figured out. And now I have this broader lens about business, or, you know, obviously the same mentality can apply to your personal life and other aspects of life. But I think that always learning feeling is really, really important.
With the success of the company now and the brand, Erica, I suspect you're out and about being invited to gigs. You are talking to people in all the brands that we've already talked about a number of times on the show. And I suspect that there are people who pull you aside and whisper to you and say, man, I'd love to do what you're doing. I'd love to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
What do you hear most often as the reason why people don't go and do it?
So I think a lot of times people get hung up on what their idea is. So I think a lot of these people are entrepreneurial. So it's just the core in their DNA that they want to build, they want to do something on their own. I've met and networked with a lot of people who have one idea and then they're back at the drawing board and they're just kind of incubating on what they're going to do and they're maybe pivoting. So I think the first thing is just making sure that you have a product that's marketable, that there's a need. And if you have that product and you're still kind of on the fence, then I think sometimes it's just about taking that first small step towards, you know, what's the quickest way to prove that there's a demand for this. With my journey, my product was already being made. Again, I wasn't making the granola to start a business from. So I just had the product already, thank God. I just had to formulate it scientifically so that I could scale it. But I already knew I had the product. So that was kind of handled. So my immediate next step was, okay, how do I validate if others are going to want it? Not just want it, but they're going to actually like put their money towards it and then come back and repeat buy over and over and over again. And rather than thinking about some huge launch and coming up with 10 flavors and how am I going to get into all these stores, I was literally like, what is the quickest way to get feedback? And I decided farmers market. So I literally gave myself a timeline of 3 months and I just did it. And I wasn't going to think about the next step until I first got that first answer about, is this product good and will people buy it and will people repeat buy it? Then, you know, once you see, okay, I got a positive signal here, then I started thinking about step two, step three. But like I said, I didn't get hung up in a grand vision and plan. I just took that first step. And I think a lot of people almost thinking too big can slow you down. I'm a big advocate of like, be lean, test things fast, be really scrappy, get it out there, prove your concept, and then move forward only once you know you have demand for your product and there's a market.
So just a couple of, just to take that off around there, just a couple of questions about the product. You use the word clean a lot when describing the product. What does it mean to have a clean granola?
And I think clean comes up a lot, especially in like the US food industry, where it could relate to sourcing, it could relate to artificial ingredients, it can relate to the type of sweeteners, sustainability. For me, with snacking and with granolas and cereals, a lot of them just have junk ingredients. So by junk, refined sweeteners. So you're talking about brown sugar, white sugar, cane syrup, and they have bad oils as well. So bad oils, to me, are the highly processed vegetable oils like canola oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil. They're all very inflammatory. And so the granola was actually born from a cleanse that my husband Tank and I do every single year after the Super Bowl. So we go 4 weeks of, you know, basically it's an anti-inflammatory diet. So we're not doing refined sweeteners. We're not doing genetically modified vegetable oils. So no canola oils. Canola oils found in everything, AKA it's called rape seed oil. And then other things like caffeine, alcohol, fried foods, processed foods, soy, dairy. And year after year, like there just weren't a lot of snacks that fit in this cleanse protocol. So I randomly was watching Food Network and I saw one of my favorite celebrity chefs making granola. And granola is one of those fake healthy foods, tons of refined sugars, bad oils. So I basically took a recipe and swapped out the refined sweeteners with just honey or organic coconut sugar, which are low, unprocessed sweeteners. And coconut sugar, for example, is actually a low glycemic sweetener. And I don't use a ton of it too. And then instead of like the canola oil or traditional oils you find in most snacks, I use organic virgin coconut oil. So by clean, you know, I'm swapping out those bad things for better ingredients. And then there's also no soy, no dairy, no GMOs. And that ended up tasting really, really good. So it wasn't just something that was clean, but it was first and foremost really tasty. So when we didn't do this cleanse anymore, when the 4 weeks was over, we could eat whatever we wanted, Tank basically wanted me to make the granola all the time. And that's just the genesis of the product.
And you continually tinker with it. And one that I'm interested in was Halloween, where you made a black granola with activated charcoal. Now, activated charcoal is something that a lot of biohackers will talk about and make a product and endeavor to sell as much as they can. Why is charcoal important in our diet and how has that gone having a black granola?
Yeah. So this is actually, I launched my charcoal chia flavor about a year ago. And honestly, it was one of those things that, like the way I started my business, I just had an idea and I wanted to test it. So it was launched initially as a seasonal flavor. And it wasn't so much about, hey, let's promote the benefits of activated charcoal. It was more like, how cool would it be if I had a black granola that was made with charcoal? That's kind of the mentality. So when I was thinking about the holidays, I was like, a black granola would be so good around October because there's Halloween. And then at Christmas time, you know, there's always this pun around, oh, you get like coal if you're bad, right? And so I was like, well, it's like giving the gift of coal, but instead of celebrating if you're like recognizing people being bad, it's like you're celebrating greatness. And then charcoal also is very much marketed for its detoxing benefits. So that would be amazing for January. But I literally launched it with the intention of doing something different, not jumping on the pumpkin spice latte train, and doing something bold, which I would say bold is definitely one of my brand values. Hopefully it comes off in my branding, my colors, and even some of the flavors, well, especially with charcoal. But the way I kind of describe it is, you know, activated charcoal, it's known and marketed for its detoxification and digestive benefits. There's no flavor or odor. It doesn't take much for it to make the granola black, but you're really going to just taste more of the granola ingredients, and it's absolutely delicious. You get some people who are all about it, and they're either all about it because they know about charcoal and its benefits, or they're all about it just because it's so different looking and they're intrigued. And then you get people who don't know anything about charcoal, and they're like, is it going to taste like tar? Like, is it going to taste like barbecue? Or they're just like, oh, like, I don't know if I want to try it. And when I make them try it, and by the way, all you have to say is it's everyone's favorite flavor, which it is, and everyone wants to jump on the bandwagon. People just love the way it tastes. Like, it's honestly my favorite flavor. And I'm saying that based off, like, if I were to do a blind taste test, I just love the way it tastes. And so I ended up keeping it full time, or not full time. I ended up keeping it like as a staple in my lineup. And now it's one of my top sellers. And I think a lot of the intrigue mostly is the color. And then of course there are some consumers who are aware of charcoal, and then there's the ones that aren't. And it's just, it's so different. So it's like a conversation starter.
And just to bring this to a close, Erica, the business started in your kitchen, then you went to the farmers markets and started dealing directly with consumers across the table. You're providing kind of a breakfast product for the bars at Uber and Slack, Dropbox, Facebook, Twitter, then consumers can also buy directly from you. Is that a fair assessment of how the business is run?
Yeah, I would say I have three businesses. So the first, which is the largest, is the office pantries. So I am in the kitchens of Google, Twitter, Slack, all these tech companies. And of course, there's a lot of companies that are not tech, like Disney, Pfizer, et cetera. Just any kind of place of work where employees get to get free snacks and drinks on just basically in their kitchen. So a lot of that is bulk. I do also have little mini grab and go packs, which are used as well. And so employees get to just have my product for free, whether that's like for their breakfast, they put it on their yogurt, or they just eat it as a snack, or they grab like a little bag to go. And so that footprint is kind of all up and down the West Coast. So Northern California is the biggest market. And then of course, in the Pacific Northwest and Seattle, you get a lot of the other offices, you know, Facebook, Dropbox, all of them have offices up there, as well as Southern California. And that kind of follows where those tech markets and hubs are booming. And then second, I do have a direct to consumer business. So I sell on my website, greatnola.com, as well as through Amazon Prime. And then third, which is more new, is I am now starting to launch into grocery stores. And this, I am just starting very hyper local. So starting in my backyard in Northern California. And what's great is that my tech and direct-to-consumer business have kind of seeded the brand and seeded demand. So now more often than not, when I'm at a grocery store, a local grocery store, say in San Francisco, and I'm kind of sampling the product, I'll get one or two people that are like, hey, I have this at my office. And I'm like, where do you work? And they're like, I work at Square. I actually find out, you know, I find out some of the offices that I'm in that I'm not even aware of because of distribution. I know everywhere that it's going. But it's really given me some leverage as far as getting into stores, because I have credibility for all this, all these great corporate customers I have. But then it's also creating demand, because I get people from these offices who buy me online because there's nowhere else to buy it. Or now that I'm going into grocery stores, people are like, oh, I recognize this. So it's three businesses in one. And I think there's definitely, you know, they all feed into each other, but ultimately grocery is probably going to be the long-term channel that I'm going to have to grow and build my brand upon. Because at the end of the day, like, Greatnola, you know, it's not just granola. I didn't think about that when I thought of my business name back in the day, but you know, it, I want to be a snack platform. So, you know, one day that might be like energy mix or bars or bites. Who knows? I have no idea yet. But I do have this broader vision of bringing clean and delicious snacks to the market beyond just granola.
Being a big part of your business, being in the service industry, providing the pantry at these tech businesses, it's quite a different approach to growing a business. Was the fact that you were so naive to the food industry and the business, was that actually an advantage? Because many people research the heck out of something to have to know everything about everything. I guess I'm sort of bringing a few things together here, is it was the fact that you took small steps and you were naive, was that an advantage? And then also the brand value of being bold enough to go, well, actually, I don't know, I'm just going to have a crack. Is that part of the genesis of the genesis of the brand and also the success of the brand for you?
100,000%. Like, if I would have done market research, first of all, I probably would have been like inundated and not done it, because I get analysis paralysis really easily. I don't think I would have done granola, right? Like, granola is probably one of the categories that most people would be like, why would you ever do granola? It's so crowded. But guess what? Like, it is crowded, but it's not crowded in the pantries. There might be one or two granolas. And I have the advantage of being local, women owned. Also, I hustle hard. I have a great network within these offices, like the corporate tech companies. And so that enabled me to kind of go into this alternative channel that most people don't think to go in. Now you talk to food brands, at least in the Bay Area where I'm based, and everyone is trying to figure out, okay, how do I get into these pantries? I fell into that on accident. So one of the things we didn't really discuss was how I got introduced to Google. I didn't think about going into Google. I wasn't that smart. All I did was I launched my business. I created a Facebook page, shared it with my network, and it just happened to catch the eye of one of my friends who worked at Google. And she reached out and was so gracious to connect me to their food team, thinking that, oh, maybe they can just give you tips. You're a budding entrepreneur. Maybe they can just give you some advice. But it just happened that it just caught them at the right time, the right person, and I got the opportunity to sample my product with the employees at Google, and they voted me in during this annual, micro kitchen fair they do every year. So it was right timing, right place. You know, it wouldn't have happened if I didn't put my my business out there. So if you're doing something, like, you definitely should try to share it with people, because you just never know what opportunities people may have for you or what kind of help people can give you. But I was totally naive. I didn't even when I got introduced to Google, I didn't think there was even a chance that there was a chance at business. I was just happy they even replied to my email to answer my question. So the naivete was really, really good. But now, you know, now that I'm in this, of course, and through the years, I've really made it a priority to network as much as possible. And just before I'm about to embark on a new strategy or a new channel, I really try to learn as much as possible from other people's mistakes so that I can avoid them for myself. So I do try to learn from others before, without having me do all this, you know, all the wrong decisions when other people have already learned it for you. So yeah, I mean, I still feel like I don't know what I'm doing, but I love it. This is how I operate best, because you kind of just get to figure things out.
And I guess with that approach, a lot of things would surprise you, because you're not planned out step by step. You're prepared to be bold and try new things. If you think back through the journey of the brand thus far, if there was one thing that did surprise you the most, what would that thing be?
On a very tactical level, I am actually surprised with how good and receptive charcoal has been. So I was actually nervous to launch my charcoal flavor. I know that there is some conflicting research and opinions about whether charcoal is good or bad for you and how people feel about charcoal and food. But I always made sure to frame it in the sense of, you know, this isn't super functional. Like, it's marketable, because charcoal is marketable, but more so it's like, I want to do something fun, bold, and different. And hey, charcoal, you know, is found in some foods, whether you're a fan or not, it tastes good. And that's all that matters. Right. But I didn't expect it to end up becoming like one of my top two flavors. And now that I'm pushing into retail, I'm finding that even the retailers are the most excited about it, because it's so different. Now, on the other side, one of the things that I've learned is that you can have something so radically different, like charcoal, but it tastes very approachable and universal. As I said, charcoal has no flavor, so you're just getting flavors of the granola ingredients, and it just is just odd, intriguing black color. Then you get other things in the middle, like, so I have a matcha flavor and I have a turmeric flavor, and I felt that, you know, those were going to be huge needle movers in the business because turmeric and matcha are, they're superfoods, they're healthy. You also don't find them in granolas yet. But I found that they kind of sit in the middle where, because matcha and turmeric do have specific flavor profiles, it's the intrigue. There's not as much intrigue unless these people truly like matcha and turmeric. So matcha and turmeric, I've learned, are more of a narrow audience, whereas charcoal can be any and all to anyone who's curious, because people don't know what charcoal tastes like. So, and it tastes like nothing, that, and they learn that immediately. So those have been interesting as far as just product development. So I'm trying to figure out, do I have the right flavors? Like, the, you know, my top, I know my top two are going to be the original and charcoal, but do I know that I have the right third and fourth and potentially fifth flavor to really be successful in the grocery channel? And so I'm just being very, very open to feedback, and I'm not trying to launch too big initially for the sake of learning and being able to iterate before I do something very wide.
So for those who want to get a hold of all the products that we've talked about and to learn more about you and the business, where is the hub for you? Where's the landing page?
GreatNola.com. So that's GR8NOLA.com.
Erica, this has been a real treat. And I think what I take from this is that there's a genuine authenticity about you, the journey you've been on, what you're doing, and I think what you're about to do. And I think that that line on the About Us page for the brand, always strive for greatness, I think it comes across very genuine. You've got a great backstory. It seems like you're hungry to learn more. You're humble with your approach. And it's been really inspiring. So thank you so much for joining us and giving us your time in your busy day to be here. Please pass on our genuine hello and thanks to Tank. Great, just the best name for the big fella. Just a great name. And I'm sure he's a big part of what you do in every aspect. So thank you, Erica.
Yeah, of course. And I love connecting and helping anyone. So if anyone wants to get directly in touch, you can reach me at founder@greatnola.com. But on the site, have great products, but then we have a lot of great content as well. So I do share blogs about my journey. We have some amazing recipes, and hopefully there's a lot more to the site than just the granola itself that will bring you value. So thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed chatting with you.
So that's today's show. There are loads more incredible guests in the weeks ahead on the Inspiring Loves podcast. All the show notes are over at athleticgreens.com. In the weeks ahead on Inspiring Lives, we'll sit down with many more outstanding performers who all share their recipe for how we can live our own inspiring life on the Inspiring Lives podcast.
The Inspiring Lives podcast, brought to you by Athletic Greens. New episodes out every other Monday morning. Tune in and subscribe on the Apple Podcasts app or your favorite podcast platform.